This podcast is a Bendigedig Media production.
Hi, I'm David Cottrell, and you are listening to a Touchline Rant podcast.
Episode 167 of a Touchline Rant podcast. My name is Luke. Thank you very much for listening. Today I am joined by Mitchell. Say hello.
Hello, everyone.
The most formidable tag team in podcast history is back once again.
Back for 2021.
I would quite like to think, if we were a tag team, I think our name should be No Filter.
I like it.
Yeah, it's good. I quite like it.
Yeah, it's good.
That's another new. That's a new podcast going to Bendigedig Media soon. Right. This week we're going to touch on the FA Cup. Give it a bit of a roundup. Look at the heroes and some of the upsets, so on and so forth. Then Man United. Are they kind of back? Are Liverpool kind of gone? What the hell is happening at Leeds? And then we've got a special shout out at the end. So, Mitch, should we start with the FA Cup?
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, magic.
I usually love third round of the FA Cup weekend because you get to see, you know, these weird and wonderful games. You get teams from League Two beating Premier League teams. You know, it's all great. The only issue with this year's is obviously there's no fucker at the games. So do you think that dilutes the magic of the cup a little bit?
Definitely. I mean, I think this is one of those where we've all felt the absence of fans, but in this competition, particularly as you said, this round, what makes it special is those fans on the terrace and seeing players that they wouldn't see week in, week out. Teams going to, you know, strange atmospheres and strange environments, and that's all part and parcel of the magic of the cup. And to take that away, it's, you know, it just feels it's not the same. And to repeat, you know, an often used phrase, it's not the same without fans. But you do wonder, and I don't want to sort of take, we'll touch upon, see, some of the teams that really made a name for themselves, and obviously those teams are going to absolutely want the opportunity to be in the cup. And so I don't want to be a sort of a sour puss on this kind of thing, but I did wonder whether there was any conversations behind the scenes that's happened about whether the FA Cup should have actually taken place this year, because you've got a league where it's already very, very condensed fixtures. On top of that, you've got cancellations because of COVID-19, which is then making the situation even worse.
Yep.
And you've suddenly still got a cup competition, which, I mean, as you rightly said, you know, the magic is taken away by a lack of fans. So there hasn't been anything to suggest there was a conversation about this, but I did wonder in the back of my mind whether there was any serious discussions about whether the competition would go ahead at all this year.
You'd imagine that if there weren't those conversations, why weren't there? Do you know what I mean? Because you'd imagine that there were. Because what they've done is just say, right, okay, the season is going to be, what, like 2 months shorter than it usually would be.
Yeah.
And when we're going to make you play exactly the same amount of games.
Yeah.
It's like, what? Yeah. What do you mean? Like, they should have made, I don't know, because I said originally they should just cancel the League Cup. That should be the first thing that was gone. But the problem with the League Cup is that there's other clubs, you know, lower down the pecking order, as it were, that will want to play in the cups. So cancelling them is such a dangerous, like, thing to talk about, because you don't know what the right bloody answer is. you know what I mean? Apart from curing COVID, I don't know what the answer is, really.
It's not ideal, is it? There's never going to be a solution. And like you said, even if we come up with a solution, you've got the situation of cancellations happening. So you might have come up with a perfect solution. You may have either cancelled the competition or you know, you've kind of reduced it in some way or whatever you've done. And then suddenly COVID strikes again and you've got cancellations and it throws the fixtures into chaos anyway. So, you know, there could have been best laid plans in place and they would have been negated anyway. So it's one of those where this is so difficult. Like it's going to be a bit of a, I mean, who knows what will happen with the rest of the fixtures and how things will go. So even the Premier God League knows. Fixtures could continually be thrown into disarray as well. So, yeah, there's no perfect answer, really. But the FA Cup, yeah, I mean, there are, you know, it's happening. And obviously it's still an opportunity for teams, even without fans, at least on the positive side, to get some exposure and get some TV money as well. So that's the positive. Yeah.
We'll look at, you know, the biggest example there is Marine. Yeah. You know, Marine, they're in the third round of the FA Cup, the first time in their history. And they're playing Spurs at home. And there's some people who didn't need to leave their house to be able to watch it live.
I was going to say that. Yeah, there were some great photos on social media, some people like leaning out their kitchen for take a snap of Gareth Bale.
He follows us on Twitter.
Bale, or the person who took the photo?
The guy that took the photo follows me on Twitter. Not Bale. I wish Bale did. He's a good, like, he's but yeah, I loved the Marine game. I mean, I didn't watch all of it, I've got to be honest, because at one point it was as if I was just watching someone smacking a toddler. It got uncomfortable. So I didn't watch all of it. I watched up to 4-0. I think I made it to half time. But it was enjoyable for those 45 minutes. Afterwards, it just was like that Simpsons meme. Like, stop it, he's already dead.
Yeah, I did fear that it would be, that it could get into sort of nearing double figures, but it was it was a good effort. I saw the highlights of it here in Australia, but yeah, I think they can, by the end of it, you know, 5-0, they probably would have taken that at the start, don't you reckon?
Oh God, yeah, definitely. Jesus.
But it was interesting because over here in Australia, that was the one of the headlines from before when the draw was made or just leading up to the games. And I always find it fascinating as to whether there's any difference in reporting out here as there is in the UK, or what you're used to hearing, you know, be the kind of the discussion points. And one of the things about heading into the weekend was, have you heard there's this team, you know, so, have you heard, mate, there's this team playing Spurs. 8-8-2, what's all that about? Terrible. Ajax was almost worse than Jordan's last week. You think I'd do better after living here for a year and a half. But yeah that
you've
was
been there quite a while now.
The discussion was about this 8-tier team playing Spurs. So even so that kind of magic of the cup and these combination of sides playing each other that you just never expect, even that kind of element and that kind of story has still translated to the other side of the world, which was nice. And it was nice for Marie to get that day.
It was good. Shout out to Crawley as well.
Yeah, hell of a performance from Crawley. Yeah,
that was, well, not up against much, really.
Well, we'll talk later on about what we're up against, but let's concentrate on the boys Crawley. And you know what? They also had a reality TV star come over the last 5 minutes, didn't they? Was
that I love this.
Mark, right?
Yeah. Literally my favourite story of the weekend. It's probably my favourite story since Twitter deleted Trump. It is the fact that Crawley Town played Premier League Leeds United with Marcelo Bielsa, who's like, you know, a tactical genius, and they were winning so comfortably they could bring on Mark Wright off the telly.
When you put it like that, it is absolutely bonkers, isn't it?
That's just ridiculous. Imagine the... I bet you he was like, Mark, look, it's the FA Cup, it's against Leeds, you're not going to get on, but if we put you on the bench, you'll give us some publicity. And then he got to like 87 minutes and was like, fucking put Mark on.
Do you know what he probably said to him? He said, Mark, I'll bring you on if the game's out of reach and it's 3-0 with 5 minutes to go. But he's probably thinking 3-0 the other way, wouldn't he?
Yeah. I love the idea. Marcelo Bielsa is known for being like a you know, fanatical tactician, and he watches endless amounts of video on his opponent.
He watched so Towie so in the lead up.
Yeah. Is he watched Towie and just like Soccer Aid and just I love the idea of Marcelo Bielsa trying to get to know who Mark Wright is.
Who is this translator trying to tell him who he is? He's like, I've never heard of Towie. What division do they play in? Oh, well, Marcelo, sorry about that, but I've got season 4 on DVD. You might want to check
maybe,
it
out. Maybe this is why Leeds were, well, frankly, shit. Because Bielsa, where he would usually spend all this time getting tactical knowledge to give them, just spent a week just binge watching Towie.
I love the thought of he actually got hooked. What he was doing, he was supposed to like watch videos of Crawley's previous games this season, and he started with Towie, but he got so hooked on Towie that he couldn't bring himself to watch anything else.
Yeah. Then he found out that Gemma Collins has got a book out and he's in that. like all his coaching staff. Marcelo, what are you doing?
Pay attention. What are you doing?
I need to see.
Gemma's got to the stage where she fell off that stage Radio One.
Marcelo's just in a YouTube wormhole. Oh, right.
Oh, I need to compose myself.
That's what it was.
And that's the magic of the cup, everyone.
I do enjoy how that tailed off. That was good. Right.
Anyone else? Hey, one more. Can I do one more shout out? Newport County. Can we just give a shout out?
Yeah.
For a great effort against Brighton. Nearly. So close, eh?
So close. I mean, not quite on the level of Crawley. You know, it's a bit of a runner-up. But Newport were brilliant. They were really
good. Participation medal for them.
Oh, they bloody love a cap, don't they?
Yeah.
They absolutely love... The medal we're giving Newport is the same one that I got given at Sports Day. You know?
They love the cap more than Marcelo Bielsa loves Gemma Collins.
Falling down a hole
at the Radio 1 Teen Awards, whatever it was,
and kicking up, and when she fell over on Dancing on Ice, as John just face planted the ice.
There you are.
Right,
I think we could have brought in some Gemma Collins listeners this week just to finish.
Yeah, we should have.
We better move on, but we should. Hopefully, we'll do some hashtags, and I reckon We could bring in some additional viewers. They're in for a shock, but you know.
I've literally just thought of the best picture for this podcast, but don't worry. Right.
Onwards.
Right, we need onwards. Manchester United.
Yeah.
Bit of momentum at the minute behind them.
I don't know why I'm still laughing.
Are you still thinking of Gemma Collins?
I was just thinking about it falling down that hole.
I've watched that video about 30 times in the last week. But like, we can't talk more about Gemma Collins than we do our football. This is...
I was gonna make a joke about something like, you know, Gemma Collins and Man United from one sluggish, labouring fool, plus Gemma Collins.
Oh, that's not nice, is it?
No, it's not. And it's not true at the moment either. United, they're bouncing back.
We're top right now.
I know. And that, you know what? If we could, we'll get serious now on United. But it's funny though, because I was reading some of the reaction to the fact United could go top. And there's a lot of stuff about, like, yeah, if it didn't have Fernandes, though, or it didn't have Rashford and Fernandes and stuff like that. And you think, yeah, but, like, when teams make a charge for the title, it's usually what happens. There's one or two. There's players that play, obviously, the whole team's playing reasonably well. But there's usually one, two, or three superstars in that team. So what if it's because Fernandes and Rashford are playing well and they're hanging out?
I mean,
that's usually what happens, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Look, I mean, we could say the same thing about most teams, you know?
Exactly.
If you go, but you know, it's like I could, you know, if someone said to me, oh, you know, oh yeah, but if United didn't have Bruno Fernandes and Marcus Rashford, all right then, fine. Take Mo Salah out of Liverpool and Virgil van Dijk. And do they challenge as much as they did last season? Do they win it, you know, without van Dijk and Salah? It's, you know.
It's yeah, exactly. You just need players step up. And they are, obviously, those two are playing very well for them. But there are other performances happening across the pitch. Eric Bailly played. He's on good form at the moment.
He had a blinder
against Villa. Oh my God! What a block! But it was the sort of performance that you, and then the reaction afterwards, where you hadn't seen that sort of stuff from United for a while. Like if you think back to when we were talking about when they lost 6-1 at home to Spurs, and I said, well, forget the fact they had a sending off. It looked like they'd given up. And they weren't.
Yeah.
They were just letting Spurs run through. And then fast forward, you know, whatever, how many months, 4 months or whatever it is, to Eric Bailly literally flinging his body in front of the ball in a last-ditch attempt to prolong that, to hold on to that lead. You know, it's chalk and cheese, really. And then the reaction afterwards was showing that was worth a goal, that block. It just, that was sort of togetherness. You just hadn't really seen much of that at United for a long, long time. And it just made you think, well, you know, maybe when, you know, at times Rashford and Fernandes have kind of picked the team up by the collar, other players then start to see that. And if they start to react and put in performances like that, then it has that filtering, that knock-on effect. It filters through the squad and the team. And you've got a player who hasn't really played much over the last few years because of injury. And he's come in and he's done that. You just start to think, well, suddenly they can ride this crest of a wave. And who knows what will happen?
Well, hopefully. I mean, we've fucking talked about it, so they're going to lose the next three games.
Yeah.
But, the ATL you cares. Know, it's been, it, regard, it's that thing of it's nice to be boiling piss again as a Man United fan. And it's also nice to see us grinding out results, like against... or not grinding out, that's a wrong turn of phrase, but getting results when it, or, you know, other times it may have slipped. So the Wolves, I know the Wolves when we were fortunate with the deflection, but our luck over the last few years has been those shots go wide, you know? And it went in. The Villa game, we dug deep and we got it. You know, we've had these results over the last few weeks and it's nice to see again. You know, for a change. Because I'm not used.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the difference is you've got a situation where United, they've always had the ability over the last few years, even when they haven't challenged for the title, to put in a performance every now and then that's really good. But then you're the question, like, and sometimes against the top teams as well. Like we've seen them win at City a couple of times over the last few years as well, for example. But then you go, but the problem is, are they then going to dig in at home to Villa and get that result, and they have, and it's those the question marks that have been thrown up about whether they can actually, like you said, really just dig in and get those results, and perhaps they're not at their fluent best, and that's been the question mark for them, that consistency. And you know, they struggled at the start of the season at home. They've had a fantastic set of results away from home, but they're starting to get that level of consistency now, both home and away, that, you know, in this season where, as I've said, I think is going to be a lower points total to win the Premier League, then they're in the mix at the moment. I'm not so sure whether they'll sustain it. I still have some question marks, but, you know, it's nice to be in the show. It would be nice for you guys to be in the show.
Well, yeah, it's just nice to be, you know, actually getting some results together again. You know, it's the first time in years. I genuinely think all the talk about Bruno Fernandes, because it has been, oh, imagine where they would be without Bruno. Fine, not a problem. But I'm old enough, sadly, to remember when signing Eric Cantona turned Manchester United from a challenger to, you know, or from someone who was an also-ran into a genuine title contender every single year. So it's fine. Sometimes you need that little spark. And he's got a lot of the Cantona about him, to be fair. So I don't care. I don't care if it's like, oh, well, it's only because of Bruno. Well, fine. Mo Salah started the turnaround at Liverpool. What's the difference? You know? Hazard at Chelsea. You know, these sort of players.
You need it. I mean, it was never going to happen by having, you know, a squad where there was no superstars and they all kind of, the sum was more than the part. You know, the totals more than some of the parts. I'm trying to forget what the bloody saying is, but you know what
it is early where you are.
It's early where I am, you know what I mean. But it was never going to be that. You need a superstar to sort of turn that round, I think, because it was, you know, they were ambling at, you know, trying to get into the fourth place, and they may end up in a similar position at the end of this season, but it's different from when, you know, you think them being whatever, when Ole took charge, it was 22 points or 19 points behind Liverpool or whatever it was that time, you know.
Yeah.
Now being level on points with them, it's a lot different situation now. And it's been, you know, he's been a catalyst. But you need, I think it was always going to have to be that sort of player to do it. But then, you know, that could lead to, you know, other signings that are of a similar ilk, you know.
Bruno Fernandes has come in and is obviously become the focal point of the team. It seems to push everyone else, because everyone else then needs to raise their level as well to get him. You know, De Gea has been back in decent form as well, and not a lot's been said about him. You know, not a lot has been said about how good De Gea has actually been, because goalkeepers literally need to borderline kill themselves to get any good press. Bad press, they get it in too much. They're drowning in it. Bad press.
Mm.
Good press, didn't happen. But De Gea's been good.
He's been very good.
Yeah. McDominate in midfield. Yeah. Legend. Like, future United captain, he's class. Darren Fletcher back at the club coaching. Do you reckon, after all of the different options that they tried replacing Sir Alex with, all they needed to do was actually say, look, what we need is someone who understands the club. Because if he understands the club, the fans will get behind him and the players will get behind him. Because a lot of our players have come through the United youth ranks. So someone like Marcus Rashford, to be being managed by Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, that's a big thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's just weird because they could, you know, they've had Van Gaal has a far better CV. I mean, Christ, I have a far better CV. But Solskjaer's come in and it just clicked. It's just clicked straight away.
It's the sort of thing, I think I read a really good, it was a really sort of astute tweet from the journalist Daniel Story, and he on Twitter, and he said Manchester United is the club that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer will do best at as a manager.
Yeah.
But he might not be the best manager or the manager who will do best at Manchester United. That's probably acceptable.
Yeah.
But which I think was a really well put. I do think because he understands the club, I think it's probably where he's got the most chance of sort of succeeding. And he understands that. And I do think he's the right person for the top because of what had happened. I think the managers before and the way it had gone with Van Gaal and the way it had gone with Jose, I think he was the right man, you know, for the right time. And, you know, I think it's strange because he's made mistakes this season, particularly in Europe and, you know, a little bit domestically. But at the same time, he's also got them in a position that they haven't been for a long time. And he's sort of steered them out of what was a kind of a really depressing period for them. And there's still a lot more excitement. They're playing more free-flowing football. You know, if you look at the stats of their goals scored and how many times they've scored five or more, under Solskjaer happened a lot in a lot more frequency than the previous managers, for example. So you sort of play in that kind of united way. I think there probably will come a point, whenever that will be, where they'll go, yeah, there are more skilled coaches out there, but actually sometimes you have to play the situation at the time. And he was the right move, I think, at the time. And while he's doing what he's doing at the moment, I think that, you know, I've always said on this show, because I'm always one for giving managers a bit more time anyway. But yes, he's made mistakes, but I always think that he's done enough to give to stay in the job and keep himself in the hot seat. And he's still doing that at the moment. So I don't think it's fair for them to even think about other managers while he's doing that.
Yeah, well said. I agree. I do agree. You're never going to hear me criticize Ole Gunnar Solskjaer ever. It's not going to happen. It just will not happen. That man gave me the greatest night of my life. And he also scored in that Champions League final.
Love it. Should we talk about someone who's got a few more problems in that at the moment? Neighbours. Not the noisy neighbours, the other neighbours over at Leeds.
Yeah. We are really tempting fate with the ATR curse this week, bigging up United and then saying Liverpool are struggling when Man United and play Liverpool.
Yes, that's right. I thought we were going to Bielsa's boys, but let's talk about Liverpool first.
Oh yeah, we could do Bielsa's boys.
Yeah.
If you want.
Let's talk about Bielsa's boys first. Yeah,
let's do Bielsa's boys. Yeah. Go on then.
What's happened? What's got well? So, you know, we saw them.
I could spin you a yarn here.
Go on. Yeah.
I feel what has happened is Leeds United decided to pick on a Touchline Rant on Twitter.
Could well be.
This is what happened. I was sat there happily, just going about my day. It was, you know, New Year's, enjoying it. My phone is exploding because I dared to say Leeds United were wrong. I dared to say Leeds were wrong when they put out that the tweet with Karen Carney. Yeah. Mm. And I called, honestly, it was ludicrous, the amount of tweets that we got. So what they did there, they angered the curse. That's what's happened. Because to be quite honest, to the Leeds United fans who listen to this, you've been shit lately. And it's since you called us out. So...
Yeah, no. It's the curse. It's
what they get, to be honest, Mitch.
Exactly.
Talking about where would Man United be without, you know, Bruno Fernandes. Where would Leeds be without Marcelo Bielsa? Fucking League One.
I know you're gonna get them onto us again here. It's gonna be a vicious cycle, actually. Though, it might
they've been off, haven't they?
Yeah, they've been off colour.
But yeah, no, they can't come at us again. It will make it worse. They were relegated. Where do you think? Again, we're gonna incur the wrath here of Leeds United fans, but I'm gonna go down this road anyway. We've talked in depth today about how the season is a month and a bit shorter, but you play in the same amount of games. our league, and also they obviously had a, you know, the end of last season wasn't that long ago, really. Are they just knackered? Do you reckon?
I think it's more than that. I think more than that's wrong. Sorry, the wrong place. I don't think that's the primary reason. I actually think it's the style of football, personally. I'm a big fan of Bielsa. It's great entertainment and all that. But I looked at the game. So I was watching. So that, you know, we talked about the Crawley game. I watched the Spurs game. And then they dismantled, you know, although it's West Brom, but they dismantled
West Brom. They did West Brom, and they did beat Burnley before that.
And they did beat Burnley, yeah. So when I've looked at their performances, I haven't thought they're tired, personally. That Tottenham game, they were just really lax in defence, and there was that sort of hipster word that's used over the last few seasons of the transition, you know, the transition when the team loses the ball. But in the transition, they were getting by a Spurs side who love playing on a counter attack with people like Son and Kane flicking the ball with it, you know, back to goal and playing them in and all that. But they were getting caught, and it wasn't because they were tired. It was purely because they were going and playing the game as if they were playing against West Brom, no different. They had chances. They had enough of the ball. You looked at the game and you take the goals out of it and you think, you know, Leeds are giving as good as they're getting here. But because
they were pretty good.
And then the United game, again, I mean, I didn't look at the game and think when they lost 6-2, that's the team who were knackered. I just thought, that's a team that are just not defending, you know, with enough bodies behind the ball at times. They're just, you know, they do come up forward, you know, their fullbacks push on. And so they do, there is space in behind them. And I just think that's the main reason. I don't think it's because they're tired. I actually think it's because of the way they get set up to play. And for every time you get a 5-0 against a West Brom, it means that you're likely to get a 6-2 against United. Maybe not so much a 3-0 against Crawley, but it can happen.
No. Well, it can. This is what happens when you get titmatized by Gemma Collins.
Exactly. But it does. But it's a question. It's an interesting point about whether they on that lovely image. It's an interesting point about whether they will actually see that also become a factor, you know, tiredness become a factor as the season progresses too. Because you did see it happen in the Championship with the season they didn't get promoted, where they fell away a little bit. It'll be interesting to see whether the sort of energy that they do, and they clearly do still put energy into games, whether that will, that then the amount of kind of yards covered and stuff and the stats, they'll probably be quite an interesting one to analyse as the season goes on.
Yeah, well, they've got 23 points at the minute. I was just having a look now. So they're 12th in the league and they are 12 points off the drop. So I can't imagine them faltering that much. It's just, I don't know, I just think Leeds are good in batches for me. You know, they're really good. Oh, they've dropped off. You know, there's no consistency there, really. I think that needs addressing. But to be honest, they're so much fun to watch.
Yeah.
Even when they lose 6-2, they're still fun to watch. It's like, oh, actually, I don't really want you to change the way you play, because it's fun. I'd hate to be a Leeds United fan.
It is fun. They've added a lot. We did say at the start, when we did our preview, that we felt Leeds were going to add a lot to the Premiership. And it's quite funny, because I think you mentioned it on Twitter when you were having that backlash from Leeds fans. You know, we've sung Leeds' praises quite a lot on this from a football point of
view. Yeah, loads.
Look, it's one tweet. You know, a lot of clubs do make mistakes and send out bad tweets. You know, sometimes you've just got to hold our hands up and say, our club's, you know, effed up here. We've made an error. Like, my club's done that a lot over the past. And obviously, they're a proud bunch, and many of them didn't want to do that. But, you know, that tweet aside, on the football side, you know, we've been huge admirers of Leeds, and we said, look, they're going to add so much to the Premier League, and they are. They are adding a heck of a lot.
Yeah.
I would be more than happy to see them carry on playing in this gung-ho style and having these crazy scorelines. Bring it on. Much rather them in the league.
Yeah.
Than the other boys.
Oh, yeah. God. I take Leeds over West Brom. Yeah. If you said to me now, right, you can next season see Leeds in the Premier League, or we'll give you back Watford. It's like Troy Deeney can stay where he is, to be honest.
I don't want Watford back in there again. No.
Nah, sorry. I'm happy with Leeds. You know, it's like, do you want Bournemouth back? Nah, you're fine. And they're all right.
The thing is,
they're not Leeds.
yeah, we'll stick with it as we are, thanks very much. You know, put your Bournemouth away, put your Bournemouth back in your back pocket.
Put it back. You're making an absolute fool of yourself.
It's interesting, but on my last tit. Point I'd like to make on Leeds. I mean, you don't call me a tit.
Yeah. Not you.
My last point on Leeds before I got abused. No, I wasn't threatened to me. is that I think the interesting thing is, you might go with, if teams are sort of leaky in defence, then you go, well, you could just sign a defender, you know, a couple of solid additions at the back, and it would kind of fix things. So you think about, actually, Liverpool had those problems that we're going to go on to in a minute with defence, and then they identified that as an area and they signed Van Dijk and it solved the issue. It's not necessarily that signing a defender will solve the issue for Leeds. A defender or two, no. Because of the way they play, and it's not saying that their current defenders are bad defenders. I think it's just the style they play. So you almost think, I don't really know. I couldn't really say with any certainty what they will need to do to resolve that end of the pitch, because I think they might sign a very good defender, but the system still might mean that they're exposed. So, I mean, you know, maybe we'll hear from the fans this week with some suggestions of what they think they need in January or in the summer. But it's an interesting one. I don't quite know whether that would actually solve it. It might need a change in system to do that. And like you said, we're happy for them to keep playing as they are.
Yeah, stay as it is. Just stay as it is. You can keep Philip Binging, you know, Bill, and he can stay in the Championship. I don't need him. I don't need Charlie Austin back. You're grand.
Exactly. Should we talk Liverpool?
Yeah, let's briefly talk Liverpool. Do they look tired to you? Is there something off about them?
Yeah. You know, they're sort of like a milk on the turn at the moment, aren't they? Yeah.
They are. They just... There's something about it. I can't work out. It's like when your dog can't jump on the bed anymore, or Nan starts going to the toilet more often. You know, something's up.
And I said I said after their 7-2 defeat against Villa, I said they looked tired, and it was.
Yeah.
I know it's a bit crazy to say because of the start of the season, but because of the fact that there was not that rest, and you know, bear in mind they've got a lot of international players as well, who. You know, always going away on international duty, and we said a lot about that. But they, the demand of, you know, the energy that Klopp sort of demands of that team, they look tired then, and I still think they haven't looked at it all season. There are games where they've absolutely obliterated teams, thinking like to the Palace game, and there's games where they've had the quality to get the results. But I think any Liverpool fan, if they're really being honest, would say that actually there hasn't been for nearly all of this season, they haven't quite looked on it. And now what's happening is it's starting to show in results. And they were at the start of the season, it wasn't. It was kind of masking some of that. But you're now starting to see that teams that are almost saying, like Southampton, where they just sat in and they let Liverpool have all the ball, but Liverpool had one shot on target all game. And actually, it's one of those games where you needed some spark, you needed some energy, you needed something to make the difference, and they didn't have it. And I think it kind of sums up what I feel has been not quite there for Liverpool this season. And they've got so much quality and they've got such a great squad that they can still, they're still probably, I mean, we talked about Manchester United in that challenge. I still think if you ask me to put my life on it, I would say, I think out of those two, Liverpool stand more of a chance of winning the league. But having said that, you know, we're used to them just being so superior to a lot of the teams in the league over the last couple of years. We're now seeing that sort of mask of immortality is coming away a little bit. And then suddenly you look at, you know, a couple of injuries and you do look at their squad. You think, yeah, they have got a great squad, but it only takes, you know, a couple of key positions for people to be away. And suddenly they're having to draft in young kids who are playing in the team, and they, you know, doing a fine job. But it does show that, you know, you can still have a great squad, but you lose key players and it does make a difference as well.
Yeah. Yeah. They haven't got as much strength in depth as other clubs as well at that level. So
not as much as United, I don't think, actually. In United's
squad, no, they haven't got as much strength. Across the board. The squad's better.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I mean, all it takes is another one of bloody Mo Salah's relatives to have a wedding and he's going to be self-isolating for 10 days. Yeah. So,
but he's looked off as well. He's looked
3 games in a row with nothing.
He's just looked off. I know fantasy Premier League managers are tearing their hair out. What do they do with him? But he's all, you know, even aside from, you know, assists and goals, he's just generally, it's not like he has looked off the boil. He hasn't got that. There's something not there. He looks tired. I going back to that word, I think they do look like they're in need of some, and maybe they do need a sign in January. Maybe it is one of the cases where perhaps they need to bring someone in. I know Jota's coming back from injury, isn't he? Which I think,
it will
give them a lift, I think. And I think it's quite timely. But yeah, they just look a little bit short. I wonder whether they'll look to have some defensive cover or look to do something in the window of January.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where they strengthen. Should we end on a shout out?
Yeah. Shout out.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Sol Bamba, Cardiff City centre-back and legend, who, it has sadly been announced this week, is suffering from, has been diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. So he is obviously going to be out for a while he receives treatment for this. And we just, you know, we couldn't let it go without saying a massive shout out to Sol Bamba, absolute legend. And, you know, here's hoping he makes a very, very quick full recovery as soon as possible.
Yeah, hear. Yeah, he's great character, isn't he, Sol? And so important for that season when Cardiff got promoted back to the Premier League. And he's one of those players that the fans almost immediately kind of connected with. I think we talked about players like, I was talking about my own club and how I felt like so many signings and people, this revolving door of signings. And I, you know, that loss of connection with players that you sort of, is what's all about being a fan, really. This is a case with Sol where I think the Cardiff fans have felt a real connection to him. They've really embraced him and he's really embraced the club and the city.
Yeah.
And him and his wife kind of embraced the city. And so I think he's one that's been held really dear in the hearts of Cardiff fans, both for his performances on the pitch, which were amazing, and his the way his personality off the pitch as well. So, yeah, I think that was a really sad news. And here's, as you said, here's to a full and speedy and full recovery, and everyone's behind him.
Yeah. He's yeah. Well, a hopeful end to the podcast, I think, is the best way to put it.
Yeah.
Have you got any more for any more?
No, not really. Yeah, just to welcome all the Gemma Collins fans to the ATR podcast. Maybe you'll be tuning in next week.
Oh, we didn't do a shout out to an FA Cup minnow getting a result, Nottingham Forest.
Exactly. Well, they beat the one half of South Wales in terms of team in the league, in the Football League. And so we now got Swansea in the next round. Yeah. Well, we do feel like a minnow in the FA Cup. We absolutely do. Our performance in the FA Cup over the last few years has been nothing short of abysmal. So it was a strange one to... strange environment to be in the fourth round of the Cup.
It's nice, though. It's nice to see you there. It is nice.
Yeah.
And it's nice, as always, to chat to you about football, Mitchell. Any more, or should we leave it there?
I'm going to quit around my head. Yeah, I'll leave it there.
Yeah, I think we should. Same time next week?
Yeah, why not?
Episode 162nd. That's gone wrong right from the start. So 160 seconds.
Play that as the outro.
Yeah.
Touchline Rant. This is a touchline rant. A touchline rant.
This podcast is a Bendy Geddig Media production.